This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Hello. Today is the second week for Jack Kirby Month. So I will be discussing Argo the movie from 2012. I'll talk about the background, the real life events, Jack Kirby's storyboards, and of course, the soundtrack by Alexander Desplat. All today on Soundtrack Alley. Andrews, and I'm full into my month of podcasts regarding Jack Kirby projects. What many of you may not know is that Jack Kirby, the man himself, was involved in a government project to save six Americans from Iran back in the 1970s. The film Argo, directed by Ben Affleck, is about that very event. I'll be mentioning some of the facts regarding the Kirby part later on in the show. So let's get into some of the facts regarding the movie and the real life event that actually happened. In an interview with Piers Morgan, former American President Jimmy Carter said that he believes the film was a great drama and that it deserved to win an Oscar for Best Film. However, Carter noted that although 90% of the contributions to the ideas and the consummation of the plan was Canadian, the film gives almost full credit to the American CIA. With that exception, the movie's very good, and Carter had said that the main hero, in his opinion, was Ken Taylor, who was the Canadian ambassador who orchestrated the entire process. In reality, Tony Mendez was the only Tahririan for a day and a half. In order to make the film feel like the 1970s, Ben Affleck shot it on regular film, cut the frames in half, and blew those images up 200% to increase their graininess. He also copied camera movements and bustling office scenes from All the President's Men for sequences depicting CIA headquarters. For LA exteriors, he borrowed from The Killing of a Chinese Bookie. As shown in this movie, by the late 1970s, the Hollywood sign, which had first been erected in 1923 as Hollywoodland to advertise an upcoming real estate development, had fallen into severe disrepair. In 1978, the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce had a fundraising campaign in which they solicited nine prominent people to give about $28 million, one donor for each letter, for the restoration. Now, Warner Brothers Records, a division of the company that later released Argo, donated the second O. So, however, the restoration was completed before events depicted in the movie ever started. Ben Affleck had stated that the production was granted unprecedented access to the CIA actual headquarters, both for the interiors as well as the exteriors. And the gratitude for that privilege belongs to Tony Mendez, the retired CIA officer portrayed by Affleck in the film. In the movie, it was stated that both the British and New Zealand embassies in Tehran turned away the six American diplomats, leaving the Canadians as their only refuge. In fact, the British embassy did shelter the six for a few days, but it was agreed that everyone that the Canadian embassy would be more secure as well as suitable. So they moved. A New Zealand official transported them, and the British also helped the other Americans trapped in the country at the same time. Director Ben Affleck acknowledged that he intentionally deviated from the real events in order to quicken the pace and build up the tension for the actual movie. Ben Affleck requested that the actors playing the embassy refugees live together for a week in a house dressed in 1970 decor in order to get acquainted and to get a better understanding of the period of time. Ben Affleck was criticized by some viewers for casting himself, a European-American, as Tony Mendez and not a Latino-Hispanic actor. Mendez, who is half Mexican, half European, however, said he had no problem with being portrayed by Affleck and approved of his performance. So, meh. Ben Affleck, a longtime Led Zeppelin fan, admits he was desperate to use the track "When the Levee Breaks" from the Led Zeppelin number 4 and vigorously pursued the rockers to win permission. But they asked him to make a very specific change. The scene was originally shot with actor Tate Donovan placing the record needle on the beginning of the album, which was wrong. "When the Levee Breaks" is actually the last song on the second side of the album. Affleck agreed to make the change, and he headed back to the editing suite in order to make the band happy. He later told the Los Angeles Times he appreciated the band's attention to detail, despite having to pay for another shoot. There was a lot of confidential material seized in the storming of the American embassy, and it can now be seen in the Museum of Tehran. The Iranian official seen on archive footage at the end of the film issuing dire threats against Canada for their role in the rescue was later executed by the regime he had served. Now, all of the Super 8 footage that was used in the opening sequence of the storm of the embassy was completely recreated, and none of it was actually authentic. For the opening scene, the DP gave 8mm cameras out to certain people in the crowd to make the opening scene have what it would seem like was actual footage from the riot. Now, there were several family members of the real Tony Mendez appear as bus passenger extras after the group was allowed to board the plane. With John Goodman's performance as John Chambers, this is the only time that the real-life Oscar winner is portrayed in a film that won the Academy Award for Best Picture. The script originally began by jumping directly into the protest outside the U.S. Embassy. However, Ben Affleck and Chris Terrio did not want the film to simply portray they did not simply want to portray the irrationally crazy Middle Easterners and the opening credits and prologue, which details how the U.S. helped install the Shah in power and the Shah's subsequent corruption and brutality was created so as to make the anger after the Iranian Revolution understandable while not supporting the grossly illegal and immoral hostage-taking at the embassy. The story of the rescue was first filmed in 1981 as Escape from Iran, The Canadian Caper, and that was directed by Lamont Johnson. The stock footage of the Iranian-American getting attacked by angry American protesters was filmed in front of the Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. The read-through of the fake Argo film occurred in the very same hotel. In the film, Tony Mendez hits upon the idea of the fake movie while watching Battle of the Planet of the Apes with his son. John Chambers, who is played by John Goodman, designed the makeup for the original Planet of the Apes, earning an honorary Oscar for his work. At his Best Director Academy Award snub, Ben Affleck joked that he didn't feel particularly aggrieved as he didn't get nominated for Best Actor either. The main person who pushed the story to be published was the former CIA director, George Tenet. He was a tenure of 1997 to 2004. While the story was never published because of bureaucracy and the yet-to-be-concluded Iran hostage crisis, it was only when Tenet assumed the directorship of the CIA and in conjunction with the agency's 50th anniversary that he persuaded Tony Mendez to write his account and memoir of the mission. Lester Siegel, who is played by Alan Arkin, was said to be a composite character. However, in real life, the makeup artist Robert Seidel, a friend of John Chambers, posed as the fake film's producer. Seidel's wife, Andy, was the fake production company's receptionist. Now, Ben Affleck assumed that Seidel, like Chambers, had passed away, but he was informed just before the film's release that he was still alive and well. Affleck had Robert Seidel flown to the film's premiere in Los Angeles, and in his opening remarks, he gave recognition to Seidel for his part on the mission. So that's pretty cool. The movie being filmed in the movie, Argo, is named for the Greek mythological ship that Jason and the Argonauts sailed in to retrieve the Golden Fleece. The film has enjoyed a great success in bootleg format in Iran, where the full facts of the Canadian caper have never been made public. This is not to say that the film was fully based or balanced account of the event, but it's attracted criticism for a rather one-sided portrayal of the Iranian people. Alan Arkin has admitted that although his Lester Siegel was a composite character, he based his character essentially on the late movie mogul Jack Warner, who died shortly before the actual hostage crisis. Now, Ben Affleck met the former CIA operative Tony Mendez for the first time in March 2011 to discuss his role. The meeting took place at Washington, D.C. and Chadwick's Bar on K Street, where the infamous spy Aldrich Ames had passed classified American documents to the KGB. In the movie, however, the initial meeting place where the pivotal scheme was hatched was staged at a smokehouse restaurant in Burbank, California, a real-life haunt for many movie celebrities. George Clooney and Grant Haslov's company, Smokehouse Productions, is named for this restaurant. And in the shot used for the postscript text features Tony's son's shelf of sci-fi toys and collectibles. Among them are some Star Wars figurines posed standing on a display with appropriate name places. According to their labels, the Jawa and Sand People figures have been switched. C-3PO is also missing. Tony Mendez was actually in the movie, and he was passing by behind Ben Affleck with his family when Tony is dropped off at the airport to fly to Tehran. The dramatic flight from the airport with the last-minute chase by the Republican Guard is entirely fictional. In reality, the diplomats showed up for their flight with pre-booked tickets and had no trouble boarding their plane. As the flight was at 5:30 a.m., there were no Republican guards on duty, even though they were not that zealous for even that cause. When the film was screened at the Toronto International Film Festival in Toronto, Ontario, the film crew criticism that it unfairly minimized the Canadian government's role in the rescues. The director, Ben Affleck, agreed, and he rewrote the postscript text that states that the CIA's operations complemented the Government of Canada's efforts, and the mission has become an admirable example of international cooperation. The Iranian chief guard that questions Tony Mendez and his group when they're about to leave Iran is the exact same guard that was arresting a woman at the airport when Tony was entering the country, which is kind of ironic. So now let's get into a little bit of facts regarding Jack Kirby. The comic book artist Jim Lee, he owns some of the storyboards from the fake film. He stated on Twitter when the film was released that he had no idea that they had been used in the mission, and he only bought them because he was a fan of Jack Kirby. The script used for the fake film project was based on the 1967 science fiction novel Lord of Light. Now, that was by Roger Zelaznia. In real life, the makeup artist John Chambers came up with the title Argo because he loved knock-knock jokes. In the film, the title becomes an off-color joke. The character of Jack Kirby, who was played by Michael Parks, shown briefly at the artist of the storyboards for the fake movie, was the pioneer of the American comic book industry and a co-creator of such seminal comic book characters as Captain America, Iron Man, the Hulk, the Silver Surfer, and the teams known as the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, as well as the X-Men. Now, Kirby had indeed created the storyboards for the adaptation of Roger Zelaznia's novel Lord of Light, which were used as proof of the movie production during the real-life Canadian caper. The fake film poster created for the real Argo mission was rather plain and black and white. In the movie, it's briefly visible in the background before the script reading event is held for the press. In the same scene, the colorful fake poster is used in the movie only briefly. So now let's get into some of the soundtrack portion of the episode. The soundtrack, of course, was composed by Alexander Desplat, and he did a phenomenal job on the score. The opening cue introduces a very rich sound full of traditional Persian instrumentation. It was flavorful and satisfyingly removed from the usual Middle Eastern cliche sound that is often favored by Hollywood composers. There's an air of authenticity about the way the vocals are used, which rather sets it apart. And indeed, it is in use with other vocals in which this plot really shines here. In particular, the kind of whispered scat music used on occasion quite ingeniously to create a fast-moving, tense sound which really is rather inspired. So the first cues I'd like to play are Argo, A Spy in Tehran, and Scent of Death. These really highlight the feeling of what Iran was like back in the 1970s. I really like these cues and hope you do as well.
Thank you. Oh.
Next is utterly compelling, with Held Up by the Guards being a prime example of the never-ending percussion ratcheting up the tension that really exceeds the levels. The exotic percussion is used throughout to make this similar effect and works really particularly well. The two crowd pleasers are The Mission, which is a piece of warm, fully orchestral Americana that might come as a bit of surprise to die-hard fans of the composer, but which somehow actually blend in rather well with the rest of the score. A little piano theme is heard in several cues and offers more than a hint of warmth whenever it appears. It's undoubtedly exciting, and the Persian soloist adds a unique flavor to it, as is with Breaking Through the Gates, that also is shown with us for that cue. So without further ado, I'd like to present The Mission, Held Up by Guards, and Breaking Through the Gates. Enjoy.
Thank you.
So we've come down to another end of Soundtrack Alley. I'd like to thank Jillian Orwall for my fantastic intro. I'd also like to express a keen interest in the Jap Kirby 100s coming soon this month. Phil Hester, who is the artist that is doing the 100 Kirbys, will be doing his fundraiser at the end of the month. So keep up with his Twitter feed at Phil Hester. Also, for the last piece of music, I'd like to be presenting are The Six Are Missing, Drive to the Airport, Missing Home, Bizarre, and Cleared Iranian Airspace. This plot is renowned as a precise, sometimes even clinical, composer and has successfully written music which conveys a genuine sense of chaos. The dramatic drive that runs through it is so powerful, and it's carefully crafted to bring out what this composer can actually do. This film score is exhilarating to me and really highlights the drama that is put into the film, and it accentuates the score so well. So also, you can follow me on my Twitter at RandallAndrews1. You can check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.net and check out my podcast on Podbean, on iTunes, on Google Play, and wherever you find podcasts. You can also email me at soundtrackalley@yahoo.com. And until next time, happy listening. Thank you.
thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take some time to review my podcast on iTunes and also listen to it on Podbean. And if you leave a review or rating on there, it'll help us get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.